Hello, my name is Brad McIntyre, and you're listening to the Cultivated Playwright Podcast. This is episode number 10. So I'm recording this podcast on December 31st, 2017. It's the last day of the year, and I probably will not get it up online before 2018. In this particular episode, I want to cover a couple of books that I read. I did not read as many books as I usually do over the course of this past year. Traditionally, I've read between 30 and 40 books, sometimes up to 50 books over the course of a year. This past year, I did not. A lot of it has to do with the fact that I will not go into details about because I listen to other past podcasts, and I seem to talk about being a new parent a lot, and I have covered the subject of not enough time or time being very essential in a previous podcast, so you can go back and listen to that. All that's to say, I just didn't have enough time to sit down and read books, so I didn't read as many books this year. I probably read, I don't know, maybe 15, 16 books since last January. I read books on all kinds of things. Fiction books, not as much fiction as I would like. Books on theater, of course. Books on creativity, which I will probably cover in a future podcast. But in this particular podcast, I want to talk about a group of three different books, completely different in subject matter, but collectively they make up sort of thematically linked series, which I will, in general, call books on ordered living. And these books are comprised, and because I read them all together over the course of the year, some of which I overlapped reading, is the only reason I noticed that they were all kind of talking about the same things from completely different points of view. These include Goodbye Things, The New Japanese Minimalism by Fumio Sasaki, Lessons from Madame Chic. The subtitle of that one is The Top 20 Things I Learned While Living in Paris by Miss Jennifer L. Scott. And I will also throw in Marie Kondo's book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, The Japanese Art of Decluttering and Organizing. Now, all three of these books are completely different in some ways, but what they do share and what they have a commonality between each other is that they're all about ordered, purposeful living. So let's talk about these books. The first one I want to kind of mention is The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up by Marie Kondo. And this book was, it sold millions of copies by now, but it was very kind of in the news about 2 years ago. And I started reading the physical book originally, and then in order to switch so that I could keep going and not slow down too much, I switched to the audiobook version, and I was delighted to see that my good friend Emily Wu Zeller is actually the reader of the audio version of this book, and she's delightful, a great actress, and she's got a great voice. Anyway, she reads the book, and the book is told, you know, through the voice of Marie Kondo as well, so most of this book, the book is about what it says it's about. It's about tidying up. In fact, I've never heard the word tidying used so many times until I read this book. But basically, it's an organization book. It's about organizing your home and your environment and keeping things kind of neat and orderly. I'll be honest, a lot of the book did not speak to me. Kondo comes off as kind of prissy and fastidious. She reminds throughout the book how accomplished she is as somebody who tidies and organizes environments. She refers to herself as sort of a guru and thinks of herself that way and does not let you forget that while you are looking at this book. She also has this weird assumption that objects have feelings and they should be treated like small inanimate people, you know, with souls and things. And she seems to genuinely believe this, which also makes her kind of come off as childish and naive in a way. I'm not going to venture too far into judgment because it could be part of her Shinto religion, you know, in this as well. But anyway, she thinks objects have feelings and you should treat them accordingly because they have feelings. So I'll just let that lay right there. The biggest takeaway is the thing that most, pretty much everybody, the thing that I took away from this book is what a lot of people took away from the book, is this concept that an object should stay in your environment or stay in your life if it, quote unquote, sparks joy. So if you look at something and you hold it in your hands and it brings a smile to your face, either in delight or in its usefulness, then keep it around. And if it doesn't, you should remove it from your environment. And I think this is a really good way of judging whether we should keep things, you know, around us. If we should streamline our environment and get rid of things, or if we should keep them around. If they spark joy, keep them. If they don't, get rid of them. So that was a big takeaway. And the other big takeaway is that every object has a purpose for us. When we bring something into our lives, when we own something, it should have a purpose for us. And sometimes, and this is the best this is the best thing I took away from this, is that sometimes the purpose of the thing is to say that you should not own it. And she uses an example in the book of, say, a shirt that you buy at a store and it almost fits, but it doesn't quite fit. And you take it home and you put it on and you look at yourself in the mirror, and the shirt basically is saying to you, hey, perhaps you shouldn't be wearing me. And that's the purpose of that shirt. Therefore, discard it, get rid of it, donate it, give it to a friend, sell it, what have you. And I like this. I like this concept. It's easier to discard things if you feel that you've gotten use out of them, if you've gotten your money's worth, or another, as Kondo would say, they have fulfilled their purpose. You're not going to own very many things for your entire life. Everything has a shelf life, pretty much. So it's kind of deducing, when has this object fulfilled its purpose for you? Well, then it's free to let it go. And I find that reducing and minimalizing things is a lot easier with this kind of elegant concept that Kondo lays out. Anyway, I read this book kind of hand in hand when I was also reading Fumio Sasaki's Goodbye Things. And the two books kind of work off each other, and I'm going to explain why when I talk about Sasaki's book. But on the whole, I found Kondo and her book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, to be a little bit prissy, a little bit aloof, and not so interested in reducing the stuff in your environment so much as keeping it orderly and organized. And organization and minimalism are two different things. And even though I found her kind of more reserved and standoffish and very self-aware of being the master of this, I don't know, domain that she may have invented, I don't know, tidying, I found Sasaki's book much more extreme, like way more extreme. So let's venture into Goodbye Things, The New Japanese Minimalism by Fumio Sasaki. Here's a little background. Fumio Sasaki is a bachelor. He lives in Japan, and he is not an organization guru. In fact, he's just a regular dude. And he found himself several years ago not living the kind of life that he would like. He stayed up too late. He wasted a lot of time on the internet, watching YouTube and reading blogs. He had an addiction to porn. He would drink too much at night. He stayed kind of isolated in his own little apartment and watched movies, and he listened to music, and he would sleep too late in the morning and rush out the door to get to work. And he kind of surrounded himself and his environment with all these possessions. In fact, he woke up one day and realized he had so many DVDs and CDs that he could no longer stack them on shelves. He had so many books, many books he had not even read. He'd only bought them to seem intelligent, to put them on display, that he never would read all the books that he had. He had a guitar that he never played. He had a photo equipment, lots and lots of photography equipment that he never got around to using and taking photos with. And he just figured one day he would just start removing things from his environment, from his life. And this took about 5 years, this process. But eventually, he ended up with about 250 possessions total in his whole life. In fact, he lives in a small apartment, the same apartment. He now lives in a different apartment, but when he was writing this book, he lived in the same apartment and just cleared everything out. He sold things, gave stuff away to friends, sold his books to secondhand bookstores and, you know, secondhand shops, the music and stuff, donated all of his clothes. And now he has a very small capsule wardrobe of just a couple of clothes. He has a Japanese futon that he pulls out of his closet and sleeps on the floor. And then in the morning, he puts it back away. He spends most of his time outside of his apartment, spending time with friends, having dinners, hiking, camping, you know, enjoying being outside of his apartment and out having a much more active social life. And he kind of traces this journey, this personal journey of downsizing and minimalizing throughout this book. So it's way relatable. It's very relatable. It's very extreme too, because Sasaki puts at the beginning some photographs, some before and after photos. And the after photos are just as extreme as the before photos. First he looks like a hoarder, and then he looks like a monk. I mean, the guy got rid of pretty much everything. He started digitalizing all of his photographs, all of his old letters and documents. He went paperless and put all of his media, digitalized all his media and stuff. So pretty much everything he has is on his computer, and he only has a few possessions now, and he seems to be enjoying life a lot more. It's made a lot more space. And in fact, one of the through lines of the book is how making room in your life, minimalizing your possessions, allows for more reflection, for more contemplation. And he has had a variety of ideas and thoughts come up because of this new lifestyle that he's using. One of his quotes right off the bat in the book is, he talks about minimalism, and he says, and I quote, "Reducing the number of possessions that you have is not a goal unto itself. I think minimalism is a method for individuals to find the things that are genuinely important to them. It's a prologue for crafting your own unique story." And then he goes on to say a little bit later, The only way to focus on the important things is to reduce the things that aren't important. And I think this is key. In fact, his book had such a profound impact on me. I was already a little bit into a process, which I will probably talk about in a future podcast, but I began digitalizing and archiving my own media this past year. My VHS tapes and DVDs and CDs and scanning photos and old letters and greeting cards and documents and basically reducing the actual physical items down more and more and just digitalizing as much as I possibly could. And that archiving has continued. I mean, I'm only, I don't know, 70% done. But it feels so much better as I get rid of more and more of my possessions around me in my environment. My environment gets to be bigger or seem bigger around me, and offers me more space to think and to enjoy what is around me. Some of his ideas are pretty extreme. I will admit, even though I find it fascinating, some of them are a little bit out there. For instance, he reduces his diet as well. He minimalizes his diet, like consciously minimalizes what he needs to eat in order to survive. So it's just water and sometimes some tea. And then he eats, I believe, eggs and vegetables, and that's about it. So I think that's a little bit extreme. I think I would like to enjoy my food a little bit better. I could probably eat a lot healthier, but minimalizing my diet for the sake of just reducing is a little bit extreme in my opinion, but it works for Sasaki. Another thing is he reduces or minimalizes his ambition. As he reduces the things around him in his environment, he also reduces his desires for having more things or for doing more things, that sense of FOMO, that fear of missing out on stuff in life. And so he works hard to overcome this. He kind of goes the opposite direction. And he lets go of all ambition. He lets go of all drive. At the end of his journey, he kind of comes out not even wanting to do anything, not wanting to make a mark on life, not wanting to accomplish great things, and just kind of be. And I really am fascinated by this. I like the Zen approach to it, but I am a person filled with drive and filled with ambition. It's one of my defining attributes, and I view it as a positive thing. I think drive is very beneficial to keep you moving forward, and I do think leaving one's mark on the world is a moral duty, especially as an artist. So as a playwright, a maker of things, I think that that's important. Anyway, I highly, highly recommend this book. It's one of those shifting of your thoughts kind of things. It really, really makes you consider the things around you in your own environment as reflected through Sasaki's story and come to really see some kind of basic facts. For instance, he talks about going to a hotel or going to a friend's house who has really nice bedding or really fluffy bath towels. Like at home, he uses a single microfiber quick dry towel for pretty much everything in his house, including drying off after a shower. So when he has the luxury of being of using somebody else's like huge towel, it really is a luxury. He really likes it because he sees it as a luxury now. It's not his an everyday thing. And that kind of applies to a whole bunch of stuff. In fact, one of the quotes kind of towards the end of the book is he talks about gratitude and being grateful for what he has around him and grateful for the things that are now viewed as luxuries. And he says, gratitude grows in the absence of things. I think that's a fantastic quote, and I think it's a fantastic book and worth checking out. A couple of weeks later, I picked up Jennifer L. Scott's Lessons from Madame Chic, which also was kind of a popular book a couple of years ago, and I just got around to reading it this past year. And this book is delightful, and it touches on some of the things that Marie Kondo and Sasaki talk about in their books, but from a completely different approach. And I really like how she talks about an ordered and purposeful life in this book, too. The book, in a nutshell, is about Jennifer L. Scott as an exchange student when she was in college and she left her home in Southern California and moved for a year abroad in Paris. And she stayed with a host family, a French family that put her up in their home. And while she was there, she made a bunch of observations and experienced a bunch of kind of etiquette lessons from the matriarch of this family, a very stylish matriarch that in her book she nicknames Madame Chic. And she kind of compares and contrasts this with her upbringing as an American from Southern California and how, you know, Americans live with how the French live, particularly with how the Parisians live. And basically, it comes down to the French live basically a very simple, elegant version of the good life. So Madame Chic is very stylish and very urbane, and everything's kind of no-nonsense. She lives very, very well. So it's this level of simplicity without being minimalistic, but with an eye towards civilized, ordered living. For instance, a couple of days after Jennifer Scott gets to this house in Paris, she gets up after she'd already gone to bed, kind of late at night, and she's heading down the hallway to the kitchen to get a late night snack. And she's confronted in the hallway by Madame Chic. And Madame Chic is wearing a silk robe and elegant pajamas. And she stops Jennifer Scott in the hallway. And she's like, "Where are you going?" And Scott says, "Oh, to get a snack." Madame Chic kind of playfully reprimands her and says, "No, no, no, there's no snacking. If you're hungry, eat at the meals, but we don't snack." So apparently this French family doesn't do between meal snacking. They're a big fan of getting enough to eat at the meals. Eat as much as you want when you sit down to have dinner or breakfast or lunch or whatever. But there's no snacking between meals. There's no such thing as a late night snack. Also, she's a little bit taken back. Madame Chic's a little bit taken back by Jennifer Scott, by what she's wearing to bed. Jennifer Scott is there in the hallway wearing a tattered t-shirt and baggy sweatpants to go to sleep in. And the next day, Madame Chic takes her out to buy actual proper pajamas because why wouldn't you respect yourself even when you're not around other people? Which I think is fantastic and kind of gives Scott a little bit of a hard time about it. In fact, one of the things Scott kind of mentions is that at no point, so there's a father, a son, and this matriarch, the mom, Madame Chic, in the family, and she doesn't see any of them dressed in anything but their best clothing ever. Outside of this one incident, she doesn't see anybody else in their pajamas. She just assumes that they wear as nice a pajamas as Madame Chic does. Nobody has casual clothes. Nobody wears sweatpants and raggedy old t-shirts around the house. When they get up in the morning, they don't even leave their bedrooms until they're ready for the day. and are presentable. And they stay presentable all day until they get home and get ready to go to bed at night, which I think is fantastic. My grandfather used to operate like this, and that's how I operate too. I don't leave the bedroom and my private quarters, so to speak, until I'm ready for the whole day. And I stay dressed for the whole day until night. My wife, on the other hand, will, like, you know, get home from work and instantly change into more comfortable clothes. And if she doesn't have to go anywhere, she'll wear her pajamas all day and lounge around the house. Anyway, I think it's a wonderfully civilized story. Wear your best clothes. And she points out that Madame Chic and the rest of the family, they don't wear t-shirts and flip-flops and sweatpants. They all have really nice clothes. All of the clothes they own are very simple clothings that fit them well and are all kind of interchangeable. They have these things called capsule wardrobes. So they don't have a lot of clothes, but the clothes they do have are high quality, and they take care of them and they wear them all the time. The other kind of little episodic takeaway is she mentions when she sits down to have a meal with this family, she's taken back, Jennifer Scott is, by the fact that they're eating on their best dishware. They're eating it basically on fine china. And she's like, is this a special occasion? And Madame Chic's like, no, this is what we eat on all the time. This is the best dishes we have, so this is what we eat on. Why? And Jennifer Scott has to kind of tell her, like, well, in America, we break out the fine china maybe once a year for a holiday meal or something, but we don't eat on it every day. And Madame Chic is the one that's, like, looking at her kind of confused and say, why not? Why wouldn't you? And at the meal, Jennifer Scott is kind of surprised and delighted by the fact that etiquette is expected. One is expected to hold one's own in the conversation at the dinner table. You don't show up at the dinner table just to eat. You also show up as a social thing to eat with your family and share conversation. And you are looked down upon if you don't hold your own in conversation. The meals are savored. They're always had at a table, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And usually they take a while because they're done in courses. So she describes dinner where they have drinks before dinner, and then they go to the table and have like a salad dish and then the main course. And then they may retire away from the table or stay at the table, but have coffee and brandy. And I think that's a wonderful way to enjoy and savor meals. You know, Jennifer Scott has brought these observations and these lessons back with her to live, you know, in America like this. I think this is a wonderful way to live, and I don't know how people pull it off, though. I rarely sit down and eat and savor my food at the table and have conversation. There's just too much to do. I usually eat on the go, but I dream about a time when I can sit down and break out the fine china. My wife and I haven't used our china but once that we got for our wedding, and it's great dishware. I wish we ate on it all the time. It's a different point of view. It's kind of, you know, enjoying the good life instead of, you know, removing all excess. It's just choosing what excess. So unlike Goodbye Things, where Sasaki is like, get rid of everything and in kind of a Spartan existence, the lessons from Madame Chic kind of point out, like, really curate your life and choose what you want to have as a luxury in your life, and then get rid of the rest, the excessive, but enjoy what you have in front of you. I thought I'd share these three books that kind of revolve around ordered, organized living. I've written on my blog a little write-up of the books, some of the books that I read this year. These three, as well as a couple of other books that I read over 2017. And you can check that out at bradmcintyre.com. You can also find links to my social media accounts, my Instagram and Tumblr and things, YouTube, on that website. I hope everybody closes out 2017 in a great way and also gets off to a wonderful start for their 2018, and that it brings all the good things in life, adventure and accomplishment and travel and romance, the good stuff. Anyway, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. You can check out The Cultivated Playwright on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, or, of course, on my own website. And I appreciate you listening. Have a good day.